if we invest in Black communities, it's an investment in the American economy. So what's good for Black America is good for America.
Hey there, Grill fam. Welcome to Dear Culture, the podcast that gives you news you can trust for the culture. I am your co-host, Shauna Pinnock, social media director here at The Grill.
And I'm your co-host, Jaron Keith Gaynor, managing editor at The Grill. And this week we're asking, Dear Culture, how can the next president help Black businesses bounce back?
Of course. But before we get into the show, G, tell me, what is on your mind this week?
Well, Shauna, I really didn't want to talk about this because it's a very sensitive topic, but I think it's really important to address. And that is a situation that happened with Darryl Walls. He is a member of the Grammy-nominated gospel group, The Walls Group. And he shared a very intimate video of him kissing who is presumably his boyfriend, on Instagram. And I'm sure for those who use Instagram, you can share things to your close friends, not to everyone else who follows you. And someone in his personal circle violated his privacy and his trust and shared that video. And the reactions, there were some people who supported him and told him, you know, we're here for you. But there are also people of the church community who had very disparaging things to say about homosexuality. And it really hit home for me because as a preacher's kid who grew up in the Black church, I know what it feels like to sit in the pew and hear a pastor almost every Sunday say disparaging things about being gay. And when you're young and Black in America and you go to what's supposed to be a refuge, where you're supposed to go and praise God and a God that is supposed to love everyone, you're told at a very young age that you're going to hell for being gay. And I know how much of a conflict that created for me spiritually. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I fell in love for the first time that I had finally accepted that part of me that it's okay to be gay. I remember praying to God for him to remove the homosexuality from me. You know, I think every gay person who grew up in the church has gone through that process of, you know, if I'm not gay, then remove it, remove whatever this is. And I prayed earnestly for that for years. I dated girls in high school, hoping that maybe the right girl would come along and make me straight. And anyone who is gay or queer knows that that's just not possible. And my hope for Darryl is that he does not allow him being publicly outed in this way, which is a violation, that he doesn't allow that to stop him from living his truth. Because it's when you step into your truth and you really accept who you are and accept the reality that it's okay to be gay. And the Bible might say a lot of things, but the Bible also is used to justify slavery. And there are many contradictory things in the Bible. And I'm thankful that there are faith leaders who know better, who study the text, who have that information available to you for those who might be struggling with the question of homosexuality in the church. And I'm proud to say that I don't feel conflicted as a Christian and a gay man, that I can be both a proud gay man and also be a believer. And I want Darryl and I want people like Darryl to know that there isn't a conflict. And so I just want to just send love out to him because it's a very touchy subject. And there's nothing worse than to walk this world feeling like the world doesn't love you back, and that you are not allowed to love who you love. And I say, follow your heart. When you listen to your heart, that's where God is. God might be in some passages in the Bible. God is bigger than the pulpit, and God is love. So that's what I have to say about that.
And I just want to touch on it real quick, because it breaks my heart to hear you say, G, like, you know, you were praying to God to remove this thing that inevitably makes you this amazing, phenomenal, one of my favorite people in the world. And this is for all of our brothers and sisters who are, you know, in the queer community in whatever realms that is, you know, please understand that that is not an affliction. It is not something that is wrong with you. It is not something that is a sin or devilish or any of that other nonsense that a lot of Christians, and I use quotation marks, you know, will like to throw out there, because it's not a liability. It is what makes you all so great, so amazing. And it's just one facet of yourselves and one facet of your lives. And I say this as a person who is a Christian, who was baptized in the church, who, you know, First Corinthians Baptist Church here in Harlem is just that, you know, Pastor Mike is and his wife, that's my Morehouse brother and my Spelman sister, you know, all of these things. But in the same breath, I recognize that there's, especially when it comes to the Black church, there's so much ugliness, so much toxicity that it angers me just to see and just to watch. And you're like, this is why people turn away from the Black church. This is why people are referring to God as your sky daddy, because you are taking, you know, what are supposed to be the teachings of love and acceptance and respect and just basic human decency and turning it into something ugly for people just being themselves and who they are. So first off, a hearty F you to whoever went and put, you know, that video out there for the masses, because surely if Daryl wanted that part of his life and his business to be out there and not interfering with his music, I'm sure he would have put that out there altogether. But what I will say is what I noticed from that video, he was so happy, you know, like a genuine joy. I saw them kissing. I was like, oh, come on now, in a panty, kissing people. Yes, you know. So yes, I hope Daryl Walls, as well as anybody who is going through the same thing, that you do understand that, first off, not every Black Christian is on this hypocritical nonsense, because these are the same Christians who like to sit up here and follow, you know, John Gray, who can't keep it in his pants, you know, but it, you know, but that's fine, because these are also the same Christians who are out here saying, you know, Donald Trump was a great Christian president. No. So it's all good. Anyway, I'll get into what's been irking me this week. And that has been a story and a video that just seems to not die. Hopefully by the time this video, this episode airs, it will be dead. Doubt it. But that is of the owner of True Kitchen and Cocktails in Dallas, Texas, Kevin Kelly. And there's this video of him walking up on this group of women and addressing the entire restaurant, where he says, you know, he created True Kitchen and Cocktails to, you know, give something to the community and Black people in a nice classy place for us to enjoy ourselves and have a good time. And, you know, but if you are not for that, right? If you can't just come in here and enjoy ass shaking music and your do say slushies in quiet and not move, not hit a whoa, none of these things, then you can get the F out of his restaurant, his establishment. This video went viral. And I found it so funny, and this is what's so fascinating about social media, is because had he just minded his business, had he just shut up, had he just, you know, you go to the women once, twice, three times. At the second time, you should have said, ladies, we've spoken to you all already about this. No dancing, no twerking or anything. Please don't stand up on our furniture. If it happens again, we will have to ask you to leave. Then the third time, and it would have been all right, we'll need to ask you all to leave. Anybody who's sitting at the tables around, if they're offended, you comp their meals or discount their meals, something like that, and go on about your business. What you don't do is now shout to a room full. And from what I saw from just this little, you know, snippet of who it was and all these other, you know, you got to kind of have to be like an internet sleuth on social media when anything goes viral and you're figuring out, are there other videos, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, you're watching primarily a group full of women, which let's also address, why the hell are we having an indoor brunch situation, maskless, in a pandemic? But that's either near or there. You know, it's primarily these women, and let's be real, the Black brunch scene, 75% are Black women, right? So I'm not surprised that this is this overwhelming demographic within this restaurant. You knew the demographic that you were looking for. And granted, I'm not a person who's going to dance on a table or twerk on some glass or anything like that. I've done it before in my heyday, you know, done it before, but I understand that there's a time and place for everything. But in the same breath, if you're going to tell me that there's a time and place for my behavior, let's also recognize that there's a time and place for your behavior, Kevin. Let's also recognize that there's a time and place for the music, Kevin. I'm sorry, you don't get to not feed me for an hour and a half, 2 hours where I'm waiting on food, but you're plying me with Hennessy and Douce slushies and then playing throw that ass in a circle. I'm gonna throw it in a circle. I'm drunk and I'm waiting for my catfish nuggets that you were taking a sweet time on. That's crazy to me. Now, there's two things. Let's also address the other fact that there's another video that came out of there's a group of Black men with their Douce slushies dancing, you know, swag surfing on the tables over here at True Kitchen. I ain't seen that nan speech. Now, what we can say, in my opinion, two things of how you can possibly address that is, you felt comfortable, Kevin Kelly, to talk to a group of Black women like that because, one, you just disrespect Black women, and two, you probably didn't want any of that drunken, like, smoke that comes from if you tell a group of Black men, drunken Black men, to get up off your tables. No, you don't get to masquerade your misogyny. You don't get to masquerade your respectability politics, because in his speech, in his dress code, which I'm Trump is basically going to say is anti-Black. It is. Go ahead and read it. You'll find it. It's anti-Black as hell. Like, if you're going to say all of these things and then constantly reference the fact that, oh, this wouldn't happen at white establishments. First off, have you ever seen white people go up for, like, Sweet Home Alabama and what the hell is that Sam song? It'll come to me. White music. You know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about. Yes, they do. It happens. Number one. Number two, if you're saying that this is going to be something that is for Black people, you don't get to demean me. You don't get to talk down on me. You don't get to tell me that me twerking is somehow degrading myself as a Black woman. No, it's me shaking my ass. Leave me the hell alone because I'm grown, you know? But it's fine, you know, but it's cool. It's cool. That to me, I personally hope that there's a ramification for him in terms of his Black business, because you don't get to disrespect and double down on the disrespect of the demographic that you're trying to cater to, the ones that's keeping you afloat in a pandemic. I'm sorry, you just don't.
There was a better way to handle that. He definitely lost his cool. He said that with his chest.
Yeah.
And that tells me that it was deeper than the dancing. It was very racialized and it was misogynist. And I think that it's a learning lesson for him. And I think that it'll likely show in the clientele that he will or will not have in the future.
Listen, he had to turn off the little Instagram comments. That's when I knew it was real. I said, you getting dragged to hell, ain't you? Rightfully. Speaking of Black-owned businesses, one of the things that I really enjoyed this year was seeing so many folks sharing, patronizing, and supporting Black-owned businesses. So, you know, from seeing this shared organically on my own social media platforms, like, let me tell you, Instagram has been telling me all the places to get my things, to even Beyonce putting out, I think it was called the Be Good list of Black businesses, of which my line sister, love you, love you, love you. I know she's listening. Thank you, Jamila. Thank you, Brooklyn T. They were featured. You know, all of these things were so inspiring. I am super curious to see how this Biden-Harris administration can amplify and kind of keep this momentum going, especially during a time where Black businesses have been hit the hardest to the pandemic. All right, G, so let's get into it. I think we all know Black folks, we do not make up the majority of the American population. We are only at 13.4%, according to Nielsen anyway. But we apparently are spending a whopping $1.2 trillion annually. And I'm just wondering, if half of that buying power went to Black-owned businesses, how do you think that could possibly impact legislation moving forward?
Well, you know, I love the term, you know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. And I think that while it's important that we continue to support Black businesses, it's important for the federal government to understand that if we invest in Black businesses, if we invest in Black communities, it's an investment in the American economy. So what's good for Black America is good for America. And that buying power would, I would hope, trigger, you know, the government to say, hey, how can we expand that buying power? How can we expand Black consumerism? And how can we expand Black small business ownership? And that's by investing in those monies. For decades, white people and white business owners have been allowed to have government contracts.
Everything.
They've had everything. We've always been shut out of the economy. And if you want to improve the jobs in Black communities, you should invest in Black businesses because they're going to employ Black people. Mm-hmm. And when you're employed, what do? You spend money. And so it's really not complicated. But the problem is that we haven't had administrations throughout the history of America that hyper-focus on helping Black business owners. And so when you see a pandemic like we're experiencing now, and you see 20-something percent of small businesses on the decline, you know that a good significant number of those people are Black, because Black business owners are always the first ones to get the brunt when the economy goes whack. And I really hope the Biden administration in particular, that he holds his end of the bargain. You know, when he was campaigning, he said that he was going to invest, I think, somewhere upward of $150 million in Black, Latino, and Indigenous businesses and creating programs that will expand access to those capitals, like private loans, federal loans. And so I hope that it translates into legislation. I think it only makes sense if you say that you care about the Black community and you want to end the economic wealth gap and systemic racism, not just in policing and stuff like that, but also in businesses. And so I'm hopeful. I really am. And to that point, you know, while Black America is really happy to see that Trump will not have a second term, there are many Black people who seem to be a bit reluctant to embrace Biden, even though we played a huge role in him winning. And maybe that's because the perceived notion that the Obama administration, which Biden was a part of, didn't do enough to address the needs of Black Americans. Do you think once Biden is inaugurated and he is then President Biden, do you think that he will actually hold up to his end of the bargain and support Black businesses?
Oh, Jaren, you're such an optimist. So we have to bring in my pessimistic view, unfortunately. You know, you said, like, what are all the problems that are ensuing in terms of, you know, buying Black, and could it affect legislation? And will Biden even have an opportunity to do all this? I think what the problem is that America is inherently racist, always has been. And the issue that comes with it is what I'm finding always happens is we will tell white America, this is what we want, this is what we're looking for. Like, I'll give you a perfect example. Black Panther changed, you know, the film came out and that changed a lot of things in Hollywood, right? Where here is this feature film primarily of Black folks. And I'm talking about not just your regular, oh, is she or she, you know, ambiguous Black woman, you know, dark-skinned Black people were dominating the movie scene, inevitably changed the trajectory of so many other things, right? So you're seeing all of a sudden there's, you know, we want Black films and here's Watch Dogs and here's Lovecraft Country, et cetera, all of these things. But then you notice they're only looking for ways in which white America can profit off of our Blackness. And I think that's what bothers me and that's what bugs me. So even in terms of legislation, think of, you know, there are still Black and brown people who are in prison right now for weed. That is very, very legal. That is seeing a huge surge in sales right now thanks to a pandemic because people are just home and, you know, smoke up, right? These Black people are still in prison while white people are selling THC dog biscuits. You know what I mean? So in terms of, do I think our buying power and really the Biden-Harris administration impacting legislation on that level and being successful at supporting Black businesses? I doubt it. And I hate to say that only because it does come from a pessimistic place of it's not going to be overnight. You know, I think there'll be small victories. I don't think the war is going to be something that's won in my lifetime, unfortunately to say. I think Joe Biden will have a much easier time in comparison to Barack Obama because Barack Obama was not just a president. He was a Black man, you know? And I think one of the things that really tends to irk me so much, there are a lot of valid critiques to make about Barack Obama. And I'm not one of those people who are like, no Barack Obama slander here. No, you can slander him. There's some things that he says and I'm like, oh, Barry. But in the same breath, I'm sorry. No, I'm not going to hold him to these unrealistic standards. And despite what ADOS and a lot of these other, you know, free thinking Blacks think, oh, he should have been the president for Black people. That's not how the presidency worked. That's just literally not how it worked. The idea that he didn't do enough for Black people is also trash. When you really think about it, when in that 8 years, did he have full control of the Senate and the House? How long did it take to try and get Obamacare to go through? And that was a whole bunch of jumping through hoops, tricks, and everything just to try and make sure that people are okay in a damn pandemic. And it's still being over here contested in random, you know, spots and places. Now, I think Joe Biden will have an easier time in a sense because he is a white man, but I fear that his pushes for diversity, although they look great on their face, we cannot underestimate the hatefulness of white people. I'm sorry, we can't. And we cannot underestimate the hatefulness of white supremacy and the underhandedness of white supremacy. And when I say that, I'm not just talking about Republicans because there are white supremacists in the Democratic Party as well. You know what I mean? So are Black businesses going to thrive? I think at least for a time when the Biden-Harris administration comes along, but only until those white folks can figure out how do we turn, all right, our support of Black-owned businesses into something that is profitable for us in the long run. And is there a way to cut out the owners of those Black-owned businesses? Is there some kind of way in which either we squash them down, which it's not pretty to squash them down right now, right? Maybe you let them, you go to a certain point, but you keep that glass ceiling on them. So I know that's a really dark It's a really dark turn and a really dark aspect or thought process to have, but you know, it's fine.
Gotta be realistic.
I mean, you gotta be, just a little bit. And I think, let's switch a little bit, because as I mentioned, despite what Ados and others may think, you know, the presidency cannot solely be focused on Black folks, but let's get into it. Should the presidency solely be focused on not just Black folks, but like any demographic in particular? Is it the executive branch's responsibility to specifically help any demographic? I got my answer, but I want to hear what you say.
No, I'll start by saying that when you do become president, you are the president of the entire United States of America. And so by focusing on one particular group doesn't mean that you're putting one over the other. But I think it is the responsibility of government at large to address inequities. And when the reason why America is so great and powerful and so rich and has so much advancement in technology and military weaponry and was able to dominate the globe was largely due to slavery and the money, the wealth that was built out of the cotton industry and the textile industry. And so I think absolutely that when it comes to Black people and Indigenous people, that there should be a hyper focus on those particular demographics, because we've been left behind for so long. It's like a race, and white people were able to lap us for literally centuries. And so to not take a little time to say, how can we specifically address the inequities for Black people in America? Like, how can we kind of close that gap? And that will require Biden and future administrations to kind of prioritize Black people a little bit more than maybe they would prioritize the business and the economy at large and the business market at large. So I think it's extremely important. What about you?
Abso-frickin-lutely. And I say this only because Black people and Indigenous people in this country have been so wronged for so long, and it continues to happen. And I hate to play the struggle Olympics. It's not something that's fun for me. However, I'm sorry. Yes, no, you came to this country, you raped, pillaged, and plundered, then you stole people and brought them to this country, and then built your entire everything on the backs of and the blood of Black and Indigenous and brown people in this damn country. So if there is going to be a reckoning, if there is ever going to be a post-racial America, if there is ever going to be something that says the United States recognizes how trash it is, because we are. The U.S. is the ghetto. If the United States recognizes how garbage that we have continued to be, let's look at what we did with DACA. Let's look at what we did with migrant immigrants and ripping babies from their parents. You can't even find their parents anymore. This trash-ass country has done these horrendous things, race massacres, et cetera, all of these true, violent, disgusting, vile sins that this country has brought forth. Yes, the executive branch, the presidency, because they are the ones who are at the head of the table. They're the ones who set the tone for the rest of what the country is supposed to look like and what we look like to others outside. The same way how Germany can fiercely apologize for the Holocaust and for, you know, Hitler. The United States, the office of the presidency, the executive branch, yes, you need to be focused on Black folks specifically. You need to be focused on Indigenous people specifically, because those are the most wronged in this country. Plain and simple, point blank, in the words of City Girls, period. It's like, I have nothing else to say.
Amen. I think it's really important to also bring up our future Vice President Kamala Harris, because she is a Black woman, and she will be the first woman of color, the first Black woman to be vice president. And when we're talking about Black businesses and what can federal government do for Black America, I think it's important to highlight the fact that Kamala will play a critical role in this administration. And while the vice presidency, the role is somewhat limited, right? You know, you advise the president, you're the president of the Senate, and it will make it difficult for Kamala to really be directly responsible for the decisions that will be made, because she will essentially just be an advisor to President Biden. Do you think that because she's a Black woman, that Black America in particular will put undue responsibility or unfair expectations on her?
Absolutely. Of course. And simply because she's a Black woman. Like, first off, we saw how garbage that the right, the supposed left, some pro-Black you know, folks, and those are in air quotes as well, have been and just unfair and just disgusting towards her. You know, she's going to have to deal with racism. She's going to have to deal with misogyny. She's going to have to deal with patriarchy. She's going to have to deal with Black people saying that, oh, well, she's not fully Black because they don't know how ethnicity works. You know, like, we're going to see the gamut. And I am so infinitely grateful to Kamala Harris for essentially, like, she's putting herself on the sword for the rest of us, you know, because she is going to get the brunt of that stuff. Same thing like what we saw with Barack Obama. Like, since when was it cool to have replicas of the president of the United States hanging from trees? Do I expect to see the same thing happen with Kamala Harris? Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm already bracing myself for that. What I do hope is, and I recognize that this is me being an optimist, that's not really my steez, you know, that's not really my zhuzh, but in my optimistic way, what I do hope is to see Black people especially not do that to her, not place unfair expectations on her in the role of vice president. There's only so much that a VP can do. Right now, should things change, 2024, hell, 2022, I'm hopeful, you know, and she becomes President Kamala Harris, that's something else, you know, of which, of course, she too will then, oh, just all the fodder, just throw it at her, right? Just all of the BS. And I hope to see that that kind of venom doesn't come from our side. I'm already expecting it from the others, already. That's in my head. But from our side, I just hope, just this once, we cannot be garbage to one another. What about you, G?
Yeah, I think you mentioned something really critical, and that's the fact that, you know, Biden is old. And yeah. There is no guarantee that Biden will get through 4 years in the White House. I think it's really significant that she is vice president because America elected a Black woman knowing that she could possibly also become president very, very soon. And it also elevated her as the face of the Democratic Party. So even if Biden was to get through 4 years, I think we all know that Kamala Harris will run for president. And what I really believe is that Kamala understands the responsibility that she has as a Black woman. This is a woman who went to Howard University. She's a member of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated. She understands her role as a Black person. I really do believe that she will do everything in her power as vice president, and if she gets that far as president, to ensure that the things that previous administrations should have done, that they will do. But you're right, it's a marathon, it's not a sprint. Like, these things, these systemic issues don't just change in 4 years or 8 years or even 10 years. This is generational issues that we have to start to address, ship it away, one thing at a time. I really do believe that Kamala Harris is the right person for this moment. I think that Biden, his ears are open. I think his heart is open. I think his mind is open. And I think that having a Black woman in his ear every day will be significant. And I don't want to be too much of an optimist, you know, and not hold Kamala Harris and Joe Biden accountable. But I think it's important that with this reset, that people give them a chance, that people understand that it's not just who's elected to the executive branch, but that we have a Senate runoff race coming up in January that will determine whether how far the Biden-Harris administration can go. So if you want Black businesses to thrive, you want to see those government dollars go into your communities, then you have to, Georgia, go out and vote on January 5th. You have to hold the administration accountable, but allow them the room to succeed. And we'll see what happens.
I mean, in the words of Langston Hughes, you know, life ain't been no crystal stair, right? But I'm excited to see what's happening. Like you said, you know, Joe Biden, his ears are open. He is listening. I think it's definitely proof worthy that, you know, white people aren't just always just terrible and horrible, you know, like sometimes, and that there is room for growth, even as, like, you know, Joe Biden is old, he's up there, you know what I mean? Over here, fucking spraining ankles, running after dogs and whatnot, wearing a boot, all of these things. But, you know, there's so much room for growth and there's so much room for learning. So even like their generational differences, I'm excited to see what happens. And quite frankly, I think that there are so many challenges in general that it takes to build financial independence and leadership for our culture. But, you know, hopefully conversations like these will spark the minds of everyone wanting to make it happen. And with that said, we here at The Grill will continue to uplift Black businesses on, you know, here at The Grill via our Black business shout out. So let's get into it. We want to remind our listeners to support your local Black businesses and donate to your local organizations and religious institutions. The business that we will be highlighting this week is Kalu, which provides luxury handbags and beautiful head wraps for the masses. Founded by former Black ballerina Kalkidan Jibril Hanes, Kalu is designed to provide luxury products that seamlessly blend with existing wardrobes. Both time-efficient and ethically sourced, Kalu was made with busy Black women in mind. Be sure to shop their website, buykalu.com. That's BYKALU.com.
The Griot has published a list of 50-plus Black businesses to support during the coronavirus pandemic. If you would like your business to be featured, please email us at info@thegriot.com. That's GRIO.com. Thank you for listening to Dear Culture. If you like what you heard, please give us a 5-star review, subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your podcast, and share it with everyone you know.
And of course, please email all questions, suggestions, and compliments. We love those, to podcast@thegriot.com. The Dear Culture podcast is brought to you by The Griot and executive produced by Blue Talusma and co-produced by Sundas Hassan, Kyrie Williams, and Kevin Y. Brown. See you next week.